Chapter 31, The Human Soul. Section A, Spirituality of the Human Soul. We are going to look at the human soul now in the light of what we have discovered in the intelligence and the will as potencies of the soul. It is quite clear that what makes a man to be a man is not to have a body or life or emotions, animals have all of these too, but to have intelligence and freedom, powers which, as we have seen, are spiritual. See Chapter 26, Section B, Chapter 27, Section B, and Chapter 29, Section B. This means that the substantial form of man, or what makes a man to be a man, must be a formal act, or principle of life, soul, whose nature is spiritual and which actualizes the body and all its potencies, and constitutes a substantial human unity composed of body and soul. See Chapter 7, Section C, Chapter 15, Section B, Chapter 18, Section C, Chapter 24, Section E, Chapter 27, Section F. This spirituality of the human soul makes it a very special type of substantial form, since it has a subsistence of its own. See Chapter 13, Section B. It is not totally absorbed by the body, but exceeds the body, so to speak. It not only informs the body, but is an act in itself. In other words, when the body dies, the soul lives on by virtue of its own subsistence. The human soul, as we shall see, is immortal. Section B. The soul as substantial form of the body, no reincarnation. The union of the spiritual soul with the body is substantial, i.e., they make up a single substance, one being, one man. See Chapters 25, Section C, and Chapter 27, Section F. When I say, I see or touch this thing, this I is the same one who says, I understand or want this thing. There is a unity of activity in man because there is a unity of being in him. Philosophers of Plato's line have maintained the spirituality of the human soul while not seeing its substantial union with the body. This has led to a false vision of man. St. Thomas says that the human soul is united to the body as its substantial form because the two conditions required for the union of form with matter are both fulfilled in the case of man. These two conditions are 1. That the form be the principle of the substantial being of the matter. The material thing has to be what it is by virtue of the form that it has. In the case of man, what makes him a real man, including his body, is that he is intelligent and free. In other words, it is not the matter that makes him to be what he is, but something else, namely the form. 2. That the form and the matter have a common and single esse. In the case of man, the soul communicates its own esse to the body without depending on the body for its own subsistence. The result is a single substance with a single esse, so that the compound of body and soul exists through the form. The excess of actuality of the soul over the body does not prevent their substantial union, but rather makes it more intense, since the more noble or perfect the form, the more organizing capacity it has over matter. Since the spiritual soul is the form of the body, it is individuated or concretized by the body that receives it. See Chapter 15, Section C. Human souls, created directly by God, see Chapter 24, Section E, are, therefore, not mass-produced, or all the same, but created for their respective bodies, and thus differentiated, unique, and unrepeatable. When separated from the body at death, they continue to be the souls of this or that body and preserve their individuality. Reincarnation is thus ruled out as absurd. In fact, it is a dogma of the Christian faith that we live only once. See Hebrews chapter 9, verse 27. Belief in reincarnation is mere wishful thinking, perhaps based on the hope that there will be another chance. But if we don't take our chance now, we are lost. We must sanctify ourselves now, without waiting for another life or another chance. And the body must play its part in the spiritual perfection of man, since it is part of his being. It shares the dignity of the human person rooted in his spirituality. Section C. The spiritual perfection of man. Man is a creature astride pure spirit and simple material life. See chapter 25, section E. In him, the entire universe is represented, since he is both material and spiritual. While the human soul is the lowest of the spiritual forms, the human body is the most noble and perfect body of the material universe because of its spiritual principle. Spiritual being is more perfect than material being. See chapter 25, section C. But does this mean that material being is evil? This is another metaphysical error, since all being is good, as we have seen. Material being is simply less perfect than spiritual being, more limited, more potential. Thus, due to the limitation of the body, the human soul has the perfections of pure spirits, but only participated, i.e., in a lower degree. For example, while the intelligence of the angels is pure intellect, the intelligence of man is more reason than intellect. See chapter 28, section D. The spiritual creature is placed at the summit of the universe and directly related to God. In this lies his dignity, that he or she can know and love God directly. The spiritual creature can transcend the created world through his spiritual activity, namely knowing and loving God, albeit in an imperfect manner. Only God can fully satisfy created intelligence and will as total truth and total goodness. He is then the last end of all human activity. The dignity of man lies in being God-oriented, and this is the basis for his inalienable right to worship God, for his religious freedom. Section D. Origin of the human soul. The human soul cannot come from the body, because this would imply a total lack of proportion between the cause and the effect. See chapter 15, section B. The being of the soul, as we have seen, is of a higher degree of perfection than the being of the body. It cannot, therefore, come from it as from an efficient cause. Nor can spiritual souls be produced by the souls of parents, since by the fact of being spiritual they are simple, i.e., they cannot split themselves to produce another soul. Only matter has parts outside parts, quantity, that can break apart. Consequently, every human soul is, as we have seen, a direct creation of God, and it is infused into the human body generated by the parents. This divine action is natural, i.e., not a miracle, since it takes place according to the laws of nature. The human body proceeds from the parents by generation. They transmit human nature in its material part, thus preparing it for the reception of the soul from God. Three persons then intervene in the begetting of a human being: the man, the woman, and God. That is why human generation is called procreation. The Creator intervenes directly. And that is why marriage has always been regarded as an essentially religious institution. This is the source of the nobility and dignity of the spiritual perfection of man, that the human soul comes directly from God, and then, through its specific operation of knowing and loving, it can reach God directly. Section E. Immortality of the human soul. When a form depends on its matter in its becoming, in its being, and in its activity, it ceases to be when the body is corrupted or broken down. This is the case with the souls of animals and plants. Soul equals principle of life. What makes plants and animals living beings is not matter, since this is what they have in common with non-living things, but a substantial form, principle of life, with certain functions which non-living beings lack. But these souls of plants and animals depend entirely on their bodies, so when these break down, they cease to be. On the other hand, as we have seen, the spiritual soul of man does not have this complete dependence on the body, and so it is immortal by virtue of its own subsistence. In the same way as it has come to be by creation, can only cease to be by annihilation, but in itself it is naturally immortal. However, the separated soul of man has an activity which is different, since as we have seen in chapter 30, section E, it is then confronted with the perfect and clear vision of God, and therefore its will is forever joined to God, if that was its last choice. Nevertheless, it retains a sort of aptitude or natural inclination to be reunited with the body, since both had made up a single substance or species, specific essence. We know from our Christian faith that there will be a resurrection of the body, and it is a reasonable belief, although we cannot strictly prove it by reason alone, due to this natural inclination of the separated soul.